everyone. Welcome to Career Conversations. My name is Siobhan Murphy, a careers advisor here in DCU. This week we are going to talk about nursing as a career choice. For those who are not already aware, 2020 was designated by the World Health Organization as International Year of the Nurse and Midwife in honour of the 200th anniversary of Florence Nightingale's birth. So joining me today to discuss nursing as a career choice and completing a final year internship during a pandemic is Sinead Kearns, who is a final year student on the Bachelor of Science General Nursing degree here in DCU. So first of all, Sinead, you're very, very welcome. And thank you for recording this episode on your day off after coming off, your first series of night work on your internship. So I might get you to just cast your mind back to that whole decision to pursue nursing and pursue the degree. Can you talk?
Yeah, no problem. Yeah. So for me, anyways, I suppose it wouldn't be like a lot of people know from the very beginning or from when they're very, very young that they want to do nursing. Maybe their parents were nurses or whatever like that. But for me, my mom wasn't a nurse. She was the mother on the road who everybody brought their children to when they got a bee sting or fell over and hurt their ankle or anything like that. And I suppose I was the kid who was always helping her in the kitchen with kids who came in who might have fallen or anything like that. She would have been a great nurse, but she never pursued that career. And then I was always interested in biology in school and stuff like that, but I never actually thought about doing nursing, I suppose. It might have been in the back of my head. But I actually went on to do, I did a makeup degree when I finished college. It wasn't kind of on the radar at that stage when I was doing my leaving cert and stuff like that. I was lucky, I was really, really lucky, I suppose, in that sense that I had enough points in my leaving cert to be able to go on and do nursing through the CAO. But I did a makeup course first, and learning about the anatomy of the face and stuff at the very beginning. I think the course might have started in October, and then as soon as the CAO opened, I was like, right, that's it, nursing's going down. So it was probably other people telling me, oh, you'd be a good nurse, before I actually thought about it myself, you know.
Well, sometimes we can't see what other people can see in us, but we all are more than one thing. You could easily have gone on to be a successful makeup artist as well. So, you know, it's really about the sequencing. So you probably wouldn't have come to nursing perhaps without doing the makeup first.
Absolutely not. And I think I needed that year as well, mm-hmm. even though I had done transition year. I think I needed that year to kind of maybe mature a little bit and kind of realize that I could do nursing, if that makes. I mean, when I came into first year, I was still petrified, mm-hmm. and I was still had all the same anxieties and worries and, oh, am I supposed to do this, and is this the right career choice for me? Because I think nursing is one of those courses in college where it's a lot more career focused. You know, you'll have an employment when you come out, fingers crossed, you know. So I think for a lot of people, it feels a little bit more scary for that reason. But there's so many people who have gone and do nursing, and it's so employable in other realms because you've got to have done a nursing degree.
Well, it's very international as well. You know? I mean, you know, there might be kind of registrations to be done in various countries and things like that, but it's highly recognised, and Irish nurses will be highly recognised around the world as well.
Absolutely, yeah. Now, I think DCU nurses anyway.
I know, we'll have to champion them anyway. But can I just, you mentioned two very valid points. One there that, you know, you're in the profession from day one on the course. You know, that's number one. There's no doubt in your mind what you will be at the end of it. You know, it's nursing education bringing you to the status of being a nurse. Now, you don't have to work as a nurse. You can go off and do other things in life. Nobody's saying it's not prescriptive. But just cast your mind back. And how did the anxieties, I suppose, dial down over the time? You know, because, you know, you mentioned there's natural fears there.
Do you know what I think it was? I think talking to other people in the course, our course were all really, really chatty, which was great. Of course, people who are more introverted and things like that, but being able to speak to other people who may not have been in your core group and realizing that everybody was going through the exact same thing. Mm-hmm. There was an awful lot of mature students in my course as well. So you're kind of feeling, Oh, I was only, I think I was 19 going into the course, and I was having the same anxieties as my friend who was 44 when she started the course. You know Brilliant. What I mean? So that kind of thing. And then also the lecturers, like I remember there was one lecturer, I don't want to kind of drop the name, but she was just so brilliant. And I remember in first year, she said to us, girls, you got the points, you've done the pre-nursing, you've done whatever you've had to do to get to this point. You deserve this spot. And that's why you're here. So don't be doubting it. Don't be feeling ostracized. That's why you're here. You're capable, and you will be ready. You know, it just takes time.
And that's really it. And I suppose that I think people recognize that as the imposter syndrome, you know, and for, you know, because we all have doubts. But I remember listening to somebody, you know, that, you know, her advice was about it, that if you're not feeling a little bit of imposter syndrome, you know, frequently enough, you're not really trying anything new.
There
always should be a little element of that going on throughout your career, because you're going to try different things, or you're going to go for promotion, or you're going to go into a specialism, or maybe even go into a different career altogether, you know, and do a career transition. So it's to get kind of, how would I suppose, a sweet spot between being comfortable and uncomfortable, as much as we all can. So we mentioned there that, you know, it is a professional course, so there would be a number of placements during your time. So currently you're on your, what we call that, we call it an internship when you get your internship in your final year. Now, just explain to the listeners, what is an internship and how does it vary? How does it differ from, say, placements that you've done up to this final year one?
Yeah, I am. Like, I suppose when you're in first year, I know that it's changed slightly. When I started in first year, we got a week in November for placement. And that's kind of just to find your feet a little bit. The hours are different and stuff like that. You were doing half days and you might have been doing 4 days a week, and it was only kind of 1 o'clock in the day or 5 o'clock. And it was just to kind of get a feel for it. And then as the years go on, you kind of start to build up your scope and things like that. When you come to your internship, for starters, you're getting paid.
Yes.
You're getting paid.
I love
there.
That bit.
You are an employee of the hospital that you were working in. You have that status, that is your role as an internship nursing student. People will call you nurse from day one when you're in first year. You get used to that. They see the uniform, they see what you're doing, they see that you're a nurse from day one. So you have that when you walk in. And that doesn't change, but the roles that you're doing, I found myself getting an awful lot busier because my scope had just broadened so much over the 4 years. And again, in my internship alone, I have, my scope has just, it's just gotten so much broader, so that I feel busier during the day. You have your responsibility over your patients. You are accountable for your actions. And I mean, I know that kind of sounds scary, but you've had 4 years practice up to that point, and you still have the nurses and the support of the people who are around you as well. Like, I mean, when you go into nursing, you have healthcare assistants, for starters, who are doing the fundamentals of nursing care, and you're learning from them as well as the nurse who's with you. So you're never completely by yourself.
Sure.
You always have your manager there and things like that. The managers are there. They'll check in on you. The nurses will check in on you. You may have a section with a nurse. The hospital wards are often divided up into sections, and you may have a section with a nurse, and you'll do team nursing. You might take care of one side of patients and they'll take care of the other side. Or you might have the whole bay to yourself, where you have those six patients to take care of for that day. And all their nursing care is your responsibility. And of course you fall back on your nurse to say, hi, can I check this with you? And you have, again, the help, you have the physios coming in. I mean, it's more responsibility. That's why you're an employee, because you're treated like an employee. You have that role.
How do you like the aspect of, you know, being in a multidisciplinary team? You know, because there's so many diverse allied professions, as well as the core professions, you know, and you know, there could be a number, everything from the radiographer to the physiotherapist to the dietitian. Like, you're interacting with a huge amount of people, never mind the, you know, the support services of the porters and the catering staff. So can you speak a little bit about that?
Oh, absolutely. You mentioned catering staff at the end there. And yeah. It comes, every single person on the ward has a role and a responsibility, everyone who's working there. And I just think, like, it's so important for me growing up anyways, I was always taught to say hello to somebody and to ask them their name if you're working with them and to say thank you. And I just think it makes the biggest difference when you do things like that, because you are a team at the end of the day, even though the caterer has their job and that's what they do. And you have 300 million nursing jobs to do. If that person comes into your section, you say thanks very much. They'll ask you about what this person's eating. This person might need help with assistance with eating, and you become, it's like it's a team. But I think on a smaller scale, it can become like a little family when you're there. When you're there for a long period of time, you get to know people. You'll get to know little things about them, small talk conversations. When you're on your break or anything like that. And I think even just the physios and stuff, you get to like see how much broader, I think, the whole it's kind of type of nursing care in a way, like getting somebody better or getting somebody to their optimal health. You know, like, health isn't just without illness. So somebody being able to get by in life, get the most out of their life, to the best of their ability with whatever illness or ailments that they have, you know.
That was very interesting what you said, you know.
Yeah.
Health.
Yeah.
Can you actually say that again? Health is more than being without illness. I love that. That's really good point. It's about how can they live well at home, you know, like to get out of the situation they're in, and an acute, because obviously it's acute hospitals, you know, you're working in. So, but it's to be able for the person to, you know, really begin thriving when they get home as well, isn't it?
Yeah. I was half quoting the World Health Organization.
Oh, good.
There.
I think I've
probably used that reference, I don't know how many times in my assignments over the last 4 years, because it's so important. And I think that's one thing that people will fear about starting nursing, because they go, oh God, that's very sad, because you see people who are so sick and you see people who are dying. And of course that's sad, but it's doing what you can for them in the time that they have. And you make the biggest difference. You won't realise that they're not supposed to necessarily remember you, but they'll remember the nursing care as a whole. And people who are in hospital will say to you, wow, the nurses, or wow, the healthcare assistants. And it does make that difference, you know, because like the World Health Organization, to go back to that, they define health as it's your well-being, social, it's holistic. So your social, your physical and your emotional and mental well-being. But it's not just without illness or ailment. So somebody who is sick or has a chronic illness, that they can get the most out of their life and reach optimal health for themselves. So it's subjective in that way, I suppose. You know, so looking at different people's priorities for themselves and not just looking at what the nurse comes in and sees somebody who's physically there and physical illness, you know, because they have everything else that's going on in their lives. And somebody who comes in who has 3 kids at home and wants to be able to make the most out of their days with their children, and their priority isn't necessarily their physio, but their physio is going to help them to be able to have the energy to play with their kids when the kids come home from school, you know, little things like that. You know,
I'm always very much struck by, and I think a lot of people, listeners, would empathise with this or experience that, the role nurses and everybody in healthcare, don't get me wrong, it's wider than nursing, but I suppose the nurses and the healthcare assistants are probably the most visual, constant people on the wards. And we're not forgetting about the doctors now, we don't upset anybody, but they, you know, they would have, you know, they'd be across, you know, the whole hospital, you know, so it's, they're flying in and out, it's a different type of role they have, you know. And that's what they're assigned to do. But it's just really around the dignity of the patients. You know, I think that's one of the core things that people see that as a gift, you know, when their loved one has been, you know, shown, you know, and treated with such dignity that, you know, where medical care can't, or a tablet can't do it, or an injection can't do it, or surgery can't do it, or whatever the interventions, that the dignity of the patient seems to be so important to people, you know.
Absolutely. And it's to know that you're leaving your loved one in there and they're going to be cared for as if it was the nurse's mom or dad. And I think when nursing gets it, that's something that I was, again, in first, going back to first year, you learn so many lessons over the years, but going back to first year, one of the lecturers said, think about how you would feel if it was your dad lying in the bed there. And what would you want for him? You know, you can't do everything. And that's why you have, again, that's why you have the team. You can't do everything, but what can you do for that patient in the time that you're with them for 15 minutes while you're assisting them with a wash? You know, what can you do for them? What conversation can you have with them that might brighten their mood for the day, or even for part of the day, or ease some of the pain that they're having, you know? And again, going back, thinking, what would I do if this was my mom or dad in the bed, or my sister or my brother, you know?
And yeah, and it helps ground you then, I'd say, and not let a thing fly away from you so much. Yeah,
exactly. And I think, again, it brings it back to sympathy, you know? I mean, when you have arguments with your siblings, sometimes it's just because there's something else that's going on with them. You're not always going to be as sympathetic towards your siblings when things like that happen. But I think there's always other things that are going on. Everybody has their own lives. Everybody has their own struggles, no matter what their illness, no matter what they're in hospital for.
And it's just to create that space that...
Could seem so minor, whatever they have in comparison to another patient, but they're still in hospital. They're still without their families for how long during the day, you know, and out of their routine. They're being told when to wash, when to have
to
wake, you know, it's
when
all
to
on
sleep.
Exactly. And they're woken up for their blood pressure being taken, you know. It's just so... you're taking somebody completely out of their lives and putting them in a different role, you know. And again, putting them in hospital gowns when they haven't got their own clothes with them or their own pajamas, you're again putting the label of patient on them, you know.
Not Tommy or Mary or, you know,
exactly. It is very, very hard, you know, but you have to put yourself in their shoes. And I think for people who have been patients, or if their family members have been patients in the past,
they get it.
I think that will help in ways, you know, in an unfortunate sense. But I think it brings it back down to, this is a human being. This is a person who is somebody's mother, father, brother, sister, daughter, you know.
And so, on the final year internship, you know, I mean, obviously we're going to speak all things COVID because this coincided. But before we delve into that wormhole, how about we have a look at, you know, what generally happens on the internship? So obviously you're doing the practical thing, you're an employee of a hospital, but do you have any college work to do during that time? What's going on there?
Yeah, sorry, I went for a little bit of a tangent
there. We were delighted you did.
even from first year, you're doing assignments while you're on, while you're doing placement. It's kind of a evidence of your achievement on placement. So you get the practice from first year, but on your internship, you still have that responsibility. You're still a college student at the end of the day, so you do still have assignments to do. So the internship usually is broken down into four separate placements. You'll be in the one hospital because that'll be your core hospital for your placement or for your placement over your 4 years. But for the general nursing students, it's broken down into four different placements. You go to four different wards, and you have two assignments to do. And you can do them on the first one, on the first two wards, and one on the second two wards. So it kind of works out nicely that way. One of the medication round, you have to be able to safely administer medication and do all that goes along with that. And the other assignment is your caseload management. So again, like I was saying, take care of your 4 to 6 patients, all parts of their care, all aspects of their care. Again, coordinating with the multidisciplinary team, like the physios and the doctors and the speech and language therapists and everything like that that goes along with that, and how you, I suppose, progress towards getting that person home or to the next stage of their healing or their treatment or care or rehabilitation, you know. So it's not terribly scary when you start your internship. It feels that way, but I think it's conversations with the other students again that will help. And a lot of the nurses in your hospitals will have gone through the exact same thing, probably not too long ago as well. There's loads of young nurses working in Dublin and all over Ireland, so they will be able to help you as well, you know.
So very practical. These are the sort of things you need to be able to do in your career.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
you know, it's a great advantage in, you know, yeah, kind of working hard at them. So let's move on to...
It's very reflective as well, I suppose.
What?
It's very reflective as well.
Okay, very good,
you know,
which is very important.
Well.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Just let's speak to the coronavirus. So you would have started your final internship in January, isn't that correct? So maybe just bring us back to more of the early days, you know, when we're all having a look at the television and, you know, Italy and China and so on and so forth. So it seems a lifetime ago, and yet it's only a matter of weeks ago. So can you reflect back to what was going on for you hearing it, that it was potentially on the way?
To be honest, I think I was ignorant about it, or maybe you could call me a hypocrite, but I was telling my friends and my family, oh, will you stop worrying about it? Stop watching that. Like, it's only the flu. People die of the flu every year. It's horrific, but it happens, and it's just another flu. And that's what I was saying. And then all of a sudden it came to Ireland. And as soon as there was the first case, like I usually stay with my my nana when I'm on placement, because she only lives around the corner from the hospital that I'm in. And as soon as the first case came to Ireland, and as soon as we found out there was a case in the hospital that I work in, I got a call from my dad on the way home from my shift. And I was in the next day, and he said, pack your bags from your nana's house and move home. So all of a sudden it was, oh God, right, okay, this is more than the flu. Everyone's starting to freak out. I need to keep people happy. And then I was hearing what was actually going on. And then, of course, you were seeing what was going on. And I think I did feel like a bit of a hypocrite, but I know that part of it was out of ignorance. And again, this was a new flu as well.
Well, I think you're being very honest, you know? But let's face it, none of us could kind of really comprehend it.
Yeah.
You know,
nobody,
we were listening, we were thought we were processing it, we were hearing information, but really what we hear was hearing wah, wah, wah. You know, we weren't really comprehending it on that kind of that individual, what does this mean for me in my life and how I go about my business? So, you know, I think that's pretty normal. Do you know that kind of way? Other people would have went the other way about it. Do you know what I mean? Or might, you know, and being, you know, hyper about it, you know, so you were more relaxed. That's okay. Well, I think it's back down to everything we say on the show. It's what it means to be human. Like, you know, we all have different responses, you know, but obviously things started to kick off kind of more realistically for you. So for your own self, how does it feel really, or have you really comprehended that you've working in the biggest pandemic for 100 years?
I don't think it's hit me yet, to be honest. No, I don't think it's hit me fully yet, to be honest. I think because, again, I'm on internship.
Sure.
So my goal is to finish my internship, to complete my assignments, to complete my assessments on the ward, and to achieve that pin to say I'm a registered nurse. So I don't think, even though I've seen it and even though I've been on COVID wards, I got coronavirus myself.
Okay, right, we better talk about that in a minute, okay.
I don't think the fact that it's a huge, huge pandemic has actually hit me yet. And I think maybe in a sense I'm lucky about that, because I'm not fearing things like unemployment and stuff like that, because I'm in the career that I'm in. And I think maybe that's unfortunate in a way, because I don't have that kind of, oh my gosh, like, this is what's going on in the world, this is what's going on in my country, you know, because it hasn't hit me personally.
You've been very busy. you have to get up and go every day. Yeah, and I think sometimes these things take a while to, I suppose, process, and it will probably take a number of years. And I know there's a lot of things going around trying to capture the social history of the moment, and, you know, probably even what we cooked and baked will be recorded in history books, and how we exercised or didn't exercise, and, you know, all sorts of things will be, you know, captured, you know, over this period of time, and that's for sure. I suppose probably the most recent thing in my memory that it's, you know, it's not comparable, but it's the only thing that I can compare it to, was the AIDS epidemic and HIV, you know, and the horror of the advertisements. I was a child at the time, and, you know, this fear that gripped the country and the world about it. There was huge amounts of misinformation.
I was just going to say that. Yeah. Say that was a thing, and we're kind of seeing that again as well.
The other thing is, maybe I'm wrong, but I think certainly in Ireland, I think we can't speak for every country because obviously we don't know, but I think the kind of the information messaging was, you know, rectified very quickly, and you know, there's even advertisements about your digital literacy and your media smartness and looking for accurate you know, sources. And I suppose the public health officials, I suppose, updating it so daily, and I suppose informing us, this is what we thought, now we now know this. So it wasn't that we were wrong, that we had to have working assumptions. This is what we thought. We now know what the experience we're having here, etc. You know, updates us. So, but you've had your own personal story of coronavirus.
Yeah.
So could you bring us through it?
Yeah. Well, anyways, I contracted the coronavirus, and I mean, I had finished a shift. I was exhausted. I think it was one of those days where I was really, really, really busy. I was on a COVID ward that day. Now, I'd say I would have picked it up about a week before that, before I actually got the symptoms. But that evening I was exhausted when I got home. I don't think you get symptoms on the day of, so anyways, I just so happened to have been on a COVID ward that day, so it was a new experience for me. It was really, really warm in all the protective gear. It was very, very, very busy, and I don't know what time I left the ward at that day. Got home, said how exhausted I was to my parents. I said I was going straight to bed. And the next morning I woke up and I just said, I do not feel right whatsoever. I had to call in sick. I said, look, it could be just absolute exhaustion. I had to call in sick. And then the following day I developed a cough. And that cough only lasted for one day, but I actually had messaged my group of friends, and I just said, girls, I just don't feel right, but I feel like I'm being paranoid. I feel like I'm being ridiculous here. I'm probably just worn out and exhausted from the shifts that I've had recently, and I probably just need more sleep. I need to be sensible and go to bed as soon as I come home from a shift if I know I'm not in the next day, and blah, blah, blah. Basically, they said, I wouldn't thank you if you came onto my ward and told me that you were having these symptoms. Even though you're only just after starting coughing, I would not thank you if you sat beside me, even with your PPE on. If you coughed, I would be not happy looking at you saying you came onto this ward and you knew you weren't well.
Sure.
So they gave me a little bit of a kick.
Mm-hmm. But sometimes we often need that. You kind of have to speak it out loud. What do you think? You know, and that's what they often say about a lot of illnesses, you know, whether you have a pain in your chest or you think, you know, you might have a symptom of a stroke, sometimes by, you know, sharing that with somebody else, then you can kind of go, let's not take a chance on anything. Go ahead.
And you don't want to, you kind of don't want to be like, oh, I'm just having like health anxiety here because I've seen X, Y, and Z. And I mean, my dad would be the worst for that. If you say you have something, he goes, oh, I don't feel right either. I don't think I'm well. You know, that kind of way. So like, I didn't want to be like that. But once my friend said to me, Sinead, seriously, call occupational health. So I called them, let them know how I was feeling, and they said, right, we're going to get you a test straight away. So the following morning, I went to the drive-thru, and I think at that stage, I must have been the quickest person to have gotten a result, because I got a result that evening, which I was shocked about. At 9 o'clock that evening, I got a call to say I was positive, and I just went, okay, right. So I was up in the attic, anyways, in my bedroom, and what I did first is I called my mom and I said, "Mom, will you go somewhere where nobody can hear you for a second?" And she was like, "Okay, right." And I said, "Okay, so are you sitting down?" And she went, "Oh, Jesus, Sinead, what's this now?" And I said, "Right, so I just got a call back. I got a positive test for the virus." And she went, "Okay, I had a feeling." Because obviously she'd known that I'd gone to the drive-thru that morning. And so I said, "Right, so I want to tell Dad as well, but I just want you to kind of clean around the house a little bit so that when I tell my siblings, they don't freak out and go, where's Sinead touched?" So they got that done first, and then I told my siblings, and my poor sister had already moved down to the couch about a week before that, out of fear of catching anything off me. So she was out of the room, and I had to isolate in the attic for 2 weeks. So it was food to the outside of my door, and calling down the stairs before I went to the toilet, because the toilet's obviously downstairs in my house, you know. So everyone had to kind of keep clear so that I could walk through the landing without meeting anybody, wearing my mask, and I think clean down the bathroom after I'd used it, you know. But like, I only had the cough for one day, and that's the symptom everybody's looking out for. And I never had a fever. You know, I had extreme fatigue, I had nausea, and I had like the burning in my nose, like as if you'd been in the swimming pool and water had gone up your nose. You know, I lost my taste and my smell. Like I would be able to taste my breakfast and then I wouldn't be able to taste my dinner. But I think the nausea and the fatigue was the main thing for me, you know, and that's not something people are kind of on the alert for, because everybody gets exhausted and everybody gets tired and needs extra time in bed, you know. But yeah, they could put it down to, oh, I just had a bad meal. I just felt really, really, really nauseated, you know. So I never actually got sick, but it was constant. That was for the whole 2 weeks. I felt like that, yeah, that was tough to get the energy levels back then as well, you know. But I was very lucky. Nobody in my house caught it. I don't know how.
Well done.
Nobody caught it.
Well done. But it just shows you that, okay, it's extremely virulent, I think is the word, isn't it? You know, it can really get around there. And I think you've a useful analogy to help people understand how easy it can be transmitted.
Oh gosh, I'm probably not the only one who's using this one though, but like,
you,
I was saying,
tell us. I didn't hear it until you told me on the pre-phone call there.
Yeah, because I was saying it to my neighbours and stuff, and they were like, oh my god, that's so easy. If you think about it, like glitter, basically. Glitter goes absolutely everywhere. When you're a child, your mother rolls her eyes and sulks when you bring home an art something that you've made and there's any bit of glitter on it, because will find it for a month afterwards. You know, it goes everywhere. So you have to kind of think about it like that. Maybe it seems a little bit less scary if you think about it like that, but if you can visualize, I have glitter all
I'll
over.
Clean up glitter, you know, if you can think about
that. You know, like if you touch your face is full of glitter, you know, if you touch your face, you touch a door handle, you touch the key on the door, and then you touch part of the door when you're walking out, you might only think to clean the door handle and the key, you know. So that part of the door that somebody else is going to touch when they're walking through the door, that'll have a little bit of glitter on it, you know. It'll fall off your clothes if you're touching your face and touching your clothes, you know. So I mean, I don't know all the facts about how long it stays on materials for, but if you think about it like that it's glitter, it's going to drop everywhere, you know. It's not going to stay in the air, and I don't think unless you're like using nebulizers and things like that, you know. So, and that's generally people who are in the hospital or already have underlying illnesses are the only people who will have them. But if you're sharing a space with somebody, you're going to drop it everywhere around that space.
Yeah, you're
going
to shed it.
Because, yeah, when you breathe it out, it comes out of your mouth and it falls on the floor. When you cough it out, it comes out of your mouth and it falls on the floor. It's a heavy particle, so it'll fall on the floor or it'll fall on any of the surfaces. So again, when I was ill, I had to clean down the bathroom, every surface that I would have touched or would have bent over. you know, even though I had my mask on, when I was up in my bedroom, I didn't have my mask on, and I would have been moving around the room and breathing on everything and touching things, you know, because you're not going to stand in a corner for the whole time that you're no isolated, way. You know. So my room was completely contaminated then, you know. So when I went into the bathroom, I had to clean the bathroom every time. And I think it was halfway through my isolation. It would have been day 5, 6, and 7 or so. And that's when I actually started to feel more ill. That's when I started to feel my heart was starting to race, and I was getting out of breath really, really easily. So I got it's an oxygen probe. It's basically a monitor that you put on your finger to check your oxygen saturations. That's very nursey now.
Yeah, no, it's okay. We kind of get the idea.
It basically tells you the oxygen that's running through your blood, and it tells you your heart rate as well. So I don't know if it's because I was an employee of the hospital or for whatever reason. Anyway, I was contacted by this company, and they wanted to monitor me from home to see about my symptoms and see how I'm doing. So it was all through an app. It was very techie. And I got a notification to say, time to check your pulse. I checked it, and then I needed to go down to the bathroom. So I went down to the bathroom, and when I came back up, I was exhausted. I was very, very out of breath. I could feel my heart was racing. I felt like I'd done like about an hour's exercise. So I, just out of curiosity, I checked it again, and our heart rate had doubled, and I was so out of breath. I had to ask my sister to actually clean the bathroom for me, because I just had no energy. I wasn't able for it. It took me a minute to relax again. But I think on a plus side, because I had done, I'm doing nursing, I knew how to kind of calm myself down a little bit, and not to, I suppose, hyperventilate or anything like that, or start getting worked up over the fact that I was out of breath, and kind of just try and calm myself down a little bit. And it did go away, but it just meant that I was more cautious when I was doing any sort of exertion, going up and down the stairs. I was taking it slow, you know, for the next couple of days.
You've really kind of given us kind of an insider, you know, and described everything so well. And the one thing that we're learning is that, you know, people are, you know, getting a variety of symptoms, and one size does not fit all, for sure. But hopefully, you know, as time moves on, that we'll obviously, the wider medical community, you know, will be able to come up with either drug treatments and or a vaccine, and hopefully we'll move in, I suppose. And all we can do is, for the moment, is just be responsible for ourselves and our own actions.
Yeah,
and, you know, and really follow the guidelines. Just bring it back full circle now. So you'll be finished when on your placement, on your final year internship?
So if everything goes well, I'll finish in September. So
fantastic.
If I've passed everything, I'll finish in September, because obviously you have the assessments and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So yeah, finish in September, and I think we'll graduate the following February or January,
March, or whatever. Yeah, whatever the next graduation is.
It's the
spring graduation, I think they call it. Yeah.
Yeah, the children's and general nurses, they graduate with us.
Ah,
so we have
brilliant.
To wait until they finish their placement. Yeah.
Brilliant. And can I ask you? You know, I know you're still on the step. You are.
Yeah.
But just looking outwards, you know, into nursing as a career, you know, I suppose that, you know, you will have, you know, an opportunity to build out a career, you know, if you remain in nursing, 30, 40 years? That sounds daunting, but also very positive. You know, what do you see the big things for nursing in the years to come?
I don't know, as like a general thing or for myself?
Well, a bit of both.
It's kind of a bit different. I think for a general thing, maybe it's a little bit more difficult to question, just because I don't know. I think nursing in this country has definitely earned a little bit of a, not a pedestal, but people are just kind of going, wow, for people who are nurses and people who are healthcare assistants and people who are working in the hospitals and who are frontline workers, and kind of that appreciation, I suppose, in a way. You don't go into any career looking for appreciation, because you're not going to get it if you're looking for it. And if that's the driving force, you know. But I think that level of respect for nurses has always been there. If you ever meet somebody and they say they're a nurse, you go, oh wow, gosh, well done, thank you for what you do, you know. And now anytime anybody knows that you're doing nursing, they'll say, God, you're doing great, thank you very much, thanks for what you're doing, you know. So that's really nice. And I think people who are working in shops and stuff are kind of getting that same, I hope they are anyways, getting that same level of, gosh, you're working in a shop and you're putting yourself at risk by being in contact with the public all the time. And thank you for what you're doing, because if it wasn't for you, we wouldn't have our fruit and veg, you know.
Sure.
So I'd hope that it's the same level of that. I don't know on a whole for nurses what I would hope for the future, I suppose. But for myself anyway, get my degree, get some more experience, because when you're finished, you're still learning, you know, you're not
huge amount to learn.
I think it's one of those careers that you're going to be constantly learning something anyways, you know, you learn something new every day, hopefully for everybody anyway. But I think in nursing, it's definitely reigns true. You do learn something every day, even if it's something about your own behavior, you know, and your own attitude towards things, or perspectives of other people, you know, in conversation, as opposed to clinical skills. But for me, if I'm not learning, I get bored. So I want to keep learning. I want, even if it's on the ward that I decide to work on, if I'm learning something, I'll be happy. Whether I decide to go on and do a postgraduate, that's not necessarily in my mind at the moment, but I think it'll be in the back of my mind anyways.
Yeah, maybe at some point.
Yeah, because it's so broad. It's so, so broad. I mean, you could go and become a public health nurse and do a course, a further course to become a public health nurse, you know, or you could go and become a children's nurse after, like, if I just did the general, you know, so I could go and do a postgraduate and become a children's nurse, or a nurse specializing in neurology, so all the brain and the spine and all that, you know, and any sort of illnesses that go along with that. So yeah, it's so broad, it's hard to kind of say.
Well, in fairness, you need more exposure, you know, to different specialities on wards and stuff before, you know, you get the goosebumps about something and kind of go, oh, I really want to do that. Just we always kind of finish up the show with, you know, asking our guests maybe to give their top tip. So just thinking about your top tip for anyone contemplating developing a career in nursing.
I don't know. I think it's very, I don't think you know till you try, because I didn't think I was going to be doing, I never put myself in fourth year, you know, that kind of way. I never put myself as an employee of a hospital working, doing full nursing roles, you know. You never know till you try. And I think you have to give everything a go. And if it doesn't go well the first time, give it a second try. I think I think for the first try is never the best indicator of how something will be, because you have all the fear factor going along with it. So I think you have to try things twice before you know for sure. So it's not all about that first placement on the ward where you're making beds and you're washing your hands every 5 seconds to make it look like you're busy, because you haven't got all that much scope. That's a great tip actually for anybody who's in first year. If you feel like you're twiddling your thumbs and you're just talking to patients, wash your hands and you'll never look like you're not busy.
Yeah, well, at the moment, that's never a bad thing.
You can never wash them too much.
As we've all found
out. When you're working in a hospital. Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, you have to try. You have to try and talk to people who've done it, you know. There's always going to be sad stories and there's always going to be reasons not to do something. So you have to find those reasons, I suppose, of why you want to do it. And I suppose what struggles you're willing to go through and what kind of things that are difficult that you're willing to go through to achieve your objective, not just what's good about it, you know.
Brilliant. It's what you're going to be able to wear well on your shoulders.
Yeah, what you're willing to put up with, what kind of heavy loads you're willing to kind of carry, and how heavy is that going to be, you know, and are you going to take care of yourself along the way to make sure that you can achieve your objective, you know. It's not all about what's great about it. Are you willing to put up with X, Y, and Z of the not so great things to be able to experience the great things? You know?
Well, I think in fairness, that's a great top tip for any career you go into. You know, it's there's highs and lows and bumps and, you know, there's so many kind of variations on a theme and a career. So I think that's been fantastic. Listen, Sinead, I can't thank you enough. I really enjoyed the conversation. I really appreciate your authenticity and your integrity and how you explained everything so well. And I really think that our listeners will get an awful lot from what you've actually spoke with us about today.
Thank you so much. I hope I was able to help somebody anyway.
Well, I think that's your mantra, isn't it? What can you do to help somebody?
Yeah, probably.
Thank you so
much.
Thank you.